I bought it by accident, drank a bottle and a half of it, and I was ready to dance. It took it away completely. I made up my mind to write to the papers to thank him. I was prompted by a feeling of gratitude, and only fancy, it led to no end of a bother. Not a single paper would take my letter. It would be very reactionary, they said, none will believe it. La diable n'exist point. You'd better remain anonymous, they advised me. What use is a letter of thanks if it's anonymous? I laughed with the men at the newspaper office. It's reactionary to believe in God in our days, I said, but I am the devil, so I may be believed in. We quite understand that, they said. Who doesn't believe in the devil? Yet it won't do, it might injure our reputation. As a joke, if you like. But I thought as a joke it wouldn't be very witty. So it wasn't printed. And do you know, I have felt sore about it to this day. My best feelings, gratitude, for instance, are literally denied me simply from my social position. The devil does not exist. Philosophical reflections again. Ivan snarled malignantly. God preserve me from it, but one can't help complaining sometimes. I am a slandered man. You upbraid me every moment with being stupid. One can see you are young. My dear fellow, intelligence isn't the only thing. I have naturally a kind and merry heart. I also write me Faustuk of grown old, but my fate is a far more serious one. Before time was, by some decree which I could never make out, I was predestined to deny, and yet I am genuinely good-hearted and not at all inclined to negation. No, you must go and deny. Without denial there's no criticism, and what would a journal be without a column of criticism? Without criticism it would be nothing but one hosanna. But nothing but hosanna is not enough for life. The hosanna must be tried in the crucible of doubt and so on, in the same style. But I don't meddle in that, I didn't create it, I am not answerable for it. Well, they've chosen their scapegoat, they've made me write the column of criticism, and so life was made possible. We understand that comedy. I, for instance, simply ask for annihilation. No, live, I am told, for there'd be nothing without you. If everything in the universe were sensible, nothing would happen. There would be no events without you, and there must be events. So against the grain I serve to produce events and do what's irrational because I am commanded to. For all their indisputable intelligence, men take this farce as something serious, and that is their tragedy. They suffer, of course. But then they live a real life, not a fantastic one, for suffering is life. Without suffering what would be the pleasure of it? It would be transformed into an endless church service, it would be holy, but tedious. But what about me? I suffer, but still, I don't live. I am X in an indeterminate equation. I am a sort of phantom in life who has lost all beginning and end, and who has even forgotten his own name. You are laughing. No, you are not laughing, you are angry again. You are forever angry. All you care about is intelligence. But I repeat again that I would give away all this superstellar life, all the ranks and honors, simply to be transformed into the soul of a merchant's wife weighing 18 stone and set candles at God's shrine. Then even you don't believe in God? Said Ivan, with a smile of hatred. What can I say? That is, if you are in earnest. Is there a God or not? Ivan cried with the same savage intensity. Ah, then you are in earnest. My dear fellow, upon my word I don't know. There. I've said it now. You don't know, but you see God. No, you are not someone apart, you are myself, you are I and nothing more. You are rubbish, you are my fancy. Well, if you like, I have the same philosophy as you, that would be true. Je pense, donc je suis, I know that for a fact, all the rest, all these worlds, God and even Satan, all that is not proved, to my mind. Does all that exist of itself, or is it only an emanation of myself, a logical development of my ego which alone has existed forever? But I make haste to stop, for I believe you will be jumping up to beat me directly. I think, therefore I am. You'd better tell me some anecdote, said Ivan miserably. There is an anecdote precisely on our subject, or rather a legend, not an anecdote. You reproach me with unbelief, you see, you say, yet you don't believe. But, my dear fellow, I am not the only one like that. We are all in a muddle over the now and all through your science. Once they used to be atoms, five senses, four elements, and then everything hung together somehow. There were atoms in the ancient world even, but since we've learned that you've discovered the chemical molecule and protoplasm and the devil knows what, we had to lower our crest. There's a regular muddle, and, above all, superstition, scandal. There's as much scandal among us as among you, you know, a little more in fact, and spying, indeed, for we have our secret police department where private information is received. Well, this wild legend belongs to our Middle Ages, not yours, but ours, and no one believes it even among us, except the old ladies of 18 stone, not your old ladies I mean, but ours. We've everything you have. I am revealing one of our secrets out of friendship for you, though it's forbidden. This legend is about paradise. There was, they say, here on earth a thinker and philosopher. He rejected everything, laws, conscience, faith, and, above all, the future life. He died, he expected to go straight to darkness and death, and he found a future life before him. He was astounded and indignant. This is against my principles, he said. And he was punished for that. That is, you must excuse me, I am just repeating what I heard myself, it's only a legend. He was sentenced to walk a quadrillion kilometers in the dark. We've adopted the metric system, you know, and when he has finished that quadrillion, the gates of heaven would be opened to him and he'll be forgiven. And what tortures have you in the other world besides the quadrillion kilometers? Asked Ivan, with a strange eagerness. What tortures? Ah, don't ask. In old days we had all sorts, but now they have taken chiefly to moral punishments, the stings of conscience and all that nonsense. We got that, too, from you, from the softening of your manners. And who's the better for it? Only those who have got no conscience, for how can they be tortured by conscience when they have none? But decent people who have conscience and a sense of honor suffer for it. Reforms, when the ground has not been prepared for them, especially if they are institutions copied from abroad, do nothing but mischief. The ancient fire was better. Well, this man, who was condemned to the quadrillion kilometers, stood still, looked round and lay down across the road. I won't go, I refuse on principle. Take the soul of an enlightened Russian atheist and mix it with the soul of the prophet Jonah, who sulked for 3 days and nights in the belly of the whale, and you get the character of that thinker who lay across the road. What did he lie on there? Well, I suppose there was something to lie on. You are not laughing. Bravo! Cried Ivan, still with the same strange eagerness. Now he was listening with an unexpected curiosity. Well, is he lying there now? That's the point, that he isn't. He lay there almost 1,000 years and then he got up and went on. What an ass! Cried Ivan, laughing nervously and still seeming to be pondering something intently. Does it make any difference whether he lies there forever or walks the quadrillion kilometers? It would take 1 billion years to walk it. Much more than that. I haven't got a pencil and paper or I could work it out. But he got there long ago, and that's where the story begins. What, he got there? But how did he get the 1 billion years to do it? Why, you keep thinking of our present Earth. But our present Earth may have been repeated 1 billion times. Why, it's become extinct, been frozen, cracked, broken to bits, disintegrated into its elements, again the water above the firmament, then again a comet, again a sun. Again from the sun it becomes Earth, and the same sequence may have been repeated endlessly and exactly the same to every detail, most unseemly and insufferably tedious. Well, what happened when he arrived? Why, the moment the gates of paradise were open and he walked in, before he had been there 2 seconds, by his watch, though to my thinking his watch must have long dissolved into its elements on the way. He cried out that those 2 seconds were worth walking not a quadrillion kilometers but a quadrillion of quadrillions, raised to the quadrillionth power. In fact, he sang Hosanna and overdid it so, that some persons there of lofty ideas wouldn't shake hands with him at first. He'd become too rapidly reactionary, they said. The Russian temperament. I repeat, it's a legend. I give it for what it's worth. So that's the sort of ideas we have on such subjects even now. I've caught you. Ivan cried, with an almost childish delight, as though he had succeeded in remembering something at last. That anecdote about the quadrillion years, I made up myself. I was 17 then, I was at the high school. I made up that anecdote and told it to a schoolfellow called Korovkin. It was at Moscow. The anecdote is so characteristic that I couldn't have taken it from anywhere. I thought I'd forgotten it. But I've unconsciously recalled it. I recalled it myself. It was not you telling it. Thousands of things are unconsciously remembered like that even when people are being taken to execution. It's come back to me in a dream. You are that dream. You are a dream, not a living creature. From the vehemence with which you deny my existence, laughed the gentleman, I am convinced that you believe in me. Not in the slightest. I haven't a hundredth part of a grain of faith in you. But you have the thousandth of a grain. Homeopathic doses perhaps are the strongest. Confess that you have faith even to the 10,000th of a grain. Not for 1 minute, cried Ivan furiously. But I should like to believe in you, he added strangely. Aha. There's an admission. But I am good, natured. I'll come to your assistance again. Listen, it was I caught you, not you me. I told you your anecdote you'd forgotten, on purpose, so as to destroy your faith in me completely. You are lying. The object of your visit is to convince me of your existence. Just so. But hesitation, suspense, conflict between belief and disbelief, is sometimes such torture to a conscientious man, such as you are, that it's better to hang oneself at once. Knowing that you are inclined to believe in me, I administered some disbelief by telling you that anecdote. I lead you to belief and disbelief by turns, and I have my motive in it. It's the new method. As soon as you disbelieve in me completely, you'll begin assuring me to my face that I am not a dream but a reality. I know you. Then I shall have attained my object, which is an honorable one. I shall sow in you only a tiny grain of faith and it will grow into an oak tree, and such an oak tree that, sitting on it, you will long to enter the ranks of the hermits in the wilderness and the saintly women, for that is what you are secretly longing for. You'll dine on locusts, you'll wander into the wilderness to save your soul. Then it's for the salvation of my soul you are working, is it, you scoundrel? One must do a good work sometimes. How ill-humored you are. Fool. Did you ever tempt those holy men who ate locusts and prayed 17 years in the wilderness till they were overgrown with moss? My dear fellow, I've done nothing else. One forgets the whole world and all the worlds, and sticks to one such saint, because he is a very precious diamond. One such soul, you know, is sometimes worth the whole constellation. We have our system of reckoning, you know. The conquest is priceless. And some of them, on my word, are not inferior to you in culture, though you won't believe it. They can contemplate such depths of belief and disbelief at the same moment that sometimes it really seems that they are within a hair's breadth of being turned upside down, as the actor Gorbunov says. Well, did you get your nose pulled? My dear fellow, observed the visitor sententiously, it's better to get off with your nose pulled than without a nose at all. As an afflicted marquis observed not long ago, he must have been treated by a specialist, in confession to his spiritual father, a Jesuit. I was present, it was simply charming. Give me back my nose. He said, and he beat his breast. My son, said the priest evasively, all things are accomplished in accordance with the inscrutable decrees of Providence, and what seems a misfortune sometimes leads to extraordinary, though unapparent, benefits. If stern destiny has deprived you of your nose, it's to your advantage that no one can ever pull you by your nose. Holy Father, that's no comfort, cried the despairing Marquis. I'd be delighted to have my nose pulled every day of my life, if it were only in its proper place. My son, sighs the priest, you can't expect every blessing at once. This is murmuring against Providence, who even in this has not forgotten you, for if you repine as you repined just now, declaring you'd be glad to have your nose pulled for the rest of your life, your desire has already been fulfilled indirectly, for when you lost your nose, you were led by the nose. Fool! How stupid! Cried Ivan. My dear friend, I only wanted to amuse you. But I swear that's the genuine Jesuit casuistry, and I swear that it all happened word for word as I've told you. It happened lately and gave me a great deal of trouble. The unhappy young man shot himself that very night when he got home. I was by his side till the very last moment. Those Jesuit confessionals are really my most delightful diversion at melancholy moments. Here's another incident that happened only the other day. A little blonde Norman girl of 20, a buxom, unsophisticated beauty that would make your mouth water, comes to an old priest. She bends down and whispers her sin into the grating. Why, my daughter, have you fallen again already? Cries the priest, O Sancta Maria, what do I hear? Not the same man this time, how long is this going on? Aren't you ashamed? Ah, mon prayer, answers the sinner with tears of penitence, car lui effectant de plaisir, et moi si peder pain. Fancy, such an answer. I drew back. It was the cry of nature, better than innocence itself, if you like. I absolved her sin on the spot and was turning to go, but I was forced to turn back. I heard the priest at the grating making an appointment with her for the evening. Though he was an old man hard as flint, he fell in an instant. It was nature, the truth of nature asserted its rights. What, you are turning up your nose again? Angry again? I don't know how to please you. Ah, my father, this gives him so much pleasure, and me so little pain. Leave me alone. You are beating on my brain like a haunting nightmare, Ivan moaned miserably, helpless before his apparition. I am bored with you, agonizingly and insufferably. I would give anything to be able to shake you off. I repeat, moderate your expectations, don't demand of me everything great and noble, and you'll see how well we shall get on, said the gentleman impressively. You are really angry with me for not having appeared to you in a red glow, with thunder and lightning, with scorched wings, but have shown myself in such a modest form. You are wounded, in the first place, in your aesthetic feelings, and, secondly, in your pride. How could such a vulgar devil visit such a great man as you? Yes, there is that romantic strain in you, that was so derided by Bielinski. I can't help it, young man. As I got ready to come to you, I did think as a joke of appearing in the figure of a retired general who had served in the Caucasus, with a star of the lion and the sun on my coat. But I was positively afraid of doing it, for you'd have thrashed me for daring to pin the lion and the sun on my coat, instead of, at least, the polar star or the Sirius. And you keep on saying I am stupid, but, mercy on us. I make no claim to be equal to you in intelligence. Mephistopheles declared to Faust that he desired evil, but did only good. Well, he can say what he likes, it's quite the opposite with me. I am perhaps the one man in all creation who loves the truth and genuinely desires good. I was there when the Word, who died on the cross, rose up into heaven bearing on his bosom the soul of the penitent thief. I heard the glad shrieks of the cherubim singing and shouting Hosanna and the thunderous rapture of the seraphim which shook heaven and all creation, and I swear to you by all that's sacred, I longed to join the choir and shout Hosanna with them all. The word had almost escaped me, had almost broken from my lips. You know how susceptible and aesthetically impressionable I am. But common sense, oh, a most unhappy trait in my character, kept me in due bounds and I let the moment pass. For what would have happened, I reflected, what would have happened after my hosanna? Everything on earth would have been extinguished at once and no events could have occurred. And so, solely from a sense of duty and my social position, was forced to suppress the good moment and to stick to my nasty task. Somebody takes all the credit of what's good for himself, and nothing but nastiness is left for me. But I don't envy the honor of a life of idle imposture, I am not ambitious. Why am I, of all creatures in the world, doomed to be cursed by all decent people and even to be kicked? For if I put on mortal form I am bound to take such consequences sometimes. I know, of course, there's a secret in it, but they won't tell me the secret for anything, for then perhaps, seeing the meaning of it, I might bawl Hosanna, and the indispensable minus would disappear at once, and good sense would reign supreme throughout the whole world. And that, of course, would mean the end of everything, even of magazines and newspapers, for who would take them in? I know that at the end of all things I shall be reconciled. I, too, shall walk my quadrillion and learn the secret. But till that happens I am sulking and fulfill my destiny though it's against the grain, that is, to ruin thousands for the sake of saving one. How many souls have had to be ruined and how many honorable reputations destroyed for the sake of that one righteous man, Job, over whom they made such a fool of me in old days. Yes, till the secret is revealed, there are two sorts of truths for me. One, their truth, yonder, which I know nothing about so far, and the other my own. And there's no knowing which will turn out the better. Are you asleep? I might well be, Ivan groaned angrily. All my stupid ideas, outgrown, thrashed out long ago, and flung aside like a dead carcass you present to me as something new. There's no pleasing you. And I thought I should fascinate you by my literary style. That Hosanna in the skies really wasn't bad, was it? And then that ironical tone a la Heine, eh? No, I was never such a flunky. How then could my soul beget a flunky like you? My dear fellow, I know a most charming and attractive young Russian gentleman, a young thinker and a great lover of literature and art, the author of a promising poem entitled The Grand Inquisitor. I was only thinking of him. I forbid you to speak of the Grand Inquisitor, cried Ivan, crimson with shame. And the geological cataclysm. Do you remember? That was a poem, now. Hold your tongue, or I'll kill you. You'll kill me? No, excuse me, I will speak. I came to treat myself to that pleasure. Oh, I love the dreams of my ardent young friends, quivering with eagerness for life. There are new men. You decided last spring, when you were meaning to come here. They proposed to destroy everything and begin with cannibalism. Stupid fellows. They didn't ask my advice. I maintain that nothing need be destroyed, that we only need to destroy the idea of God in man. That's how we have to set to work. It's that we must begin with. Oh, blind race of men who have no understanding. As soon as men have all of them denied God, and I believe that period, analogous with geological periods, will come to pass, the old conception of the universe will fall of itself without cannibalism, and, what's more, the old morality, and everything will begin anew. Men will unite to take from life all it can give, but only for joy and happiness in the present world. Man will be lifted up with a spirit of divine titanic pride and the man, God will appear. From hour to hour extending his conquest of nature infinitely by his will and his science, man will feel such lofty joy from hour to hour in doing it that it will make up for all his old dreams of the joys of heaven. Everyone will know that he is mortal and will accept death proudly and serenely like a god. His pride will teach him that it's useless for him to repine at life's being a moment, and he will love his brother without need of reward. Love will be sufficient only for a moment of life, but the very consciousness of its momentariness will intensify its fire, which now is dissipated in dreams of eternal love beyond the grave. and so on in the same style. Charming. Ivan sat with his eyes on the floor, and his hands pressed to his ears, but he began trembling all over. The voice continued. The question now is, my young thinker reflected, is it possible that such a period will ever come? If it does, everything is determined and humanity is settled forever. But as, owing to man's inveterate stupidity, this cannot come about for at least 1,000 years, everyone who recognizes the truth even now may legitimately order his life as he pleases, on the new principles. In that sense, all things are lawful for him. What's more, even if this period never comes to pass, since there is anyway no God and no immortality, the new man may well become the man, God, even if he is the only one in the whole world, and promoted to his new position, he may light-heartedly overstep all the barriers of the old morality of the old slaveman, if necessary. There is no law for God. Where God stands, the place is holy. Where I stand will be at once the foremost place. All things are lawful and that's the end of it. That's all very charming, but if you want to swindle, why do you want a moral sanction for doing it? But that's our modern Russian all over. He can't bring himself to swindle without a moral sanction. He is so in love with truth. The visitor talked, obviously carried away by his own eloquence, speaking louder and louder and looking ironically at his host. But he did not succeed in finishing. Ivan suddenly snatched a glass from the table and flung it at the orator. Ah, may I ask Bitenfin, cried the latter, jumping up from the sofa and shaking the drops of tea off himself. He remembers Luther's inkstand. He takes me for a dream and throws glasses at a dream. It's like a woman. I suspected you were only pretending to stop up your ears. But after all, that's stupid. A loud, persistent knocking was suddenly heard at the window. Ivan jumped up from the sofa. Do you hear? You'd better open, cried the visitor. It's your brother Alishaw with the most interesting and surprising news, I'll be bound. Be silent, deceiver, I knew it was Alishaw, I felt he was coming, and of course he has not come for nothing. Of course he brings news, Ivan exclaimed frantically. Open, open to him. There's a snowstorm and he is your brother. Monsieur Sait, il attempts qu'il fait. Quista ne parmetter un chien de hause. Does the gentleman know the weather he's making? It's not weather for a dog. The knocking continued. Ivan wanted to rush to the window, but something seemed to fetter his arms and legs. He strained every effort to break his chains, but in vain. The knocking at the window grew louder and louder. At last the chains were broken and Ivan leapt up from the sofa. He looked round him wildly. Both candles had almost burnt out, the glass he had just thrown at his visitor stood before him on the table, and there was no one on the sofa opposite. The knocking on the window frame went on persistently, but it was by no means so loud as it had seemed in his dream. On the contrary, it was quite subdued. It was not a dream. No, I swear it was not a dream, it all happened just now, cried Ivan. He rushed to the window and opened the movable pane. Alishaw, I told you not to come, he cried fiercely to his brother. In two words, what do you want? In two words, do you hear? An hour ago Smerdyakov hanged himself, Alishaw answered from the yard. Come round to the steps, I'll open at once, said Ivan, going to open the door to Alishaw. Chapter 10 It was he who said that Alishaw coming in told Ivan that a little over an hour ago Maria Kondratovna had run to his rooms and informed him Smerdyakov had taken his own life. I went in to clear away the samovar and he was hanging on a nail in the wall. On Alishaw's inquiring whether she had informed the police, she answered that she had told no one, but I flew straight to you, I've run all the way. She seemed perfectly crazy, Alishaw reported, and was shaking like a leaf. When Alishaw ran with her to the cottage, he found Smerdyakov still hanging. On the table lay a note, I destroy my life of my own will and desire, so as to throw no blame on anyone. Alishaw left the note on the table and went straight to the police captain and told him all about it. And from him I've come straight to you, said Alishaw, in conclusion, looking intently into Ivan's face. As though struck by something in his expression. Brother, he cried suddenly, you must be terribly ill. You look and don't seem to understand what I tell you.